Hey everyone, welcome to DeFi Expectations. Before we start, go ahead and like this video and make sure to subscribe to our channel for updates. Today we've got Tony from SafeSex Finance. How you doing, Tony?
Hey, good, thanks. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely.
Happy to have you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in crypto and DeFi.
Yeah, sure, thanks. So, my name's Tony. I'm just about 30 years old. I'm from Canada. I work as a solutions architect for a security company. So I started off as a security analyst there a few years back and got into the solutions architecture side of things. I guess my first experience with crypto was just like buying the all-time high kind of in like 2017 or 18 or whenever that was, when Bitcoin crashed to like $11,000, I put a bunch of money in and I was like, there's no way it can keep going. And then it just kept going. So I lost most of my money and I forgot about it until I guess 3 or 4 months ago, maybe 5 months ago, when I just like randomly went onto the Biz board and I was like, oh, it's just everything is crypto again. Let's check it out. And that's kind of how I got back into it.
It's funny, you have a pretty similar story to me.
What led you to SafeSex Finance?
Well, it was pretty much happenstance. So, like I said, I was kind of perusing Biz. I'm looking for what I can get myself in on, and one of the things that popped up was DXSale, the decentralized IDO platform and locking platform, and all that good stuff. So I bought into DXSale. And I started staking, and I was just kind of hanging out around the DXSale chat and stuff. And then there was like a community, or there is a community centric chat called the DXSale Presale Apes. You might be familiar with DXSale has just a lot of greasy stuff going on, a lot of like pump and dumps, a lot of scams. So people are constantly chattering about what's going on and what they can get in on. And I think I was just hanging out. A bunch of us were in that chat and we're throwing around like meme coin names. Everyone was doing like SafeMoon spinoffs and there's like all the Elon coin spinoffs. And someone threw out SafeSex and we were like, that is a really good name. That could probably actually be something. So a bunch of us hopped into a separate Telegram chat and started kind of hashing it out. And then Levi, our in-house artist, started making all these cute little condom avatars and stickers.
Can you tell us a little bit about SafeMoon? Like that's the first thing I noticed. It was pretty funny. My next door neighbor actually sent me something like a TikTok video about it because he knows I've gotten like pretty heavily into crypto. And I was like, oh, just looks like a huge scam. Cause like the kid was talking about Hoge and then he was talking about SafeMoon. And just like watching all the stuff, I was like, oh, this screams of scam. And now it's like I feel like I've had to definitely recant on that, because it's a different world on BSC than it is on ETH, Ethereum. So yeah, it was a whole new experience for me. And then like the next thing I had heard about was ASS. So I got in on that and have been slightly exploring like the projects on Binance, but it's still very, very new to me. So yeah, can you like go over, do you know much about SafeMoon? And was that kind of the
I'm
of these tokens that really like spurred this huge growth of meme coins?
I think so. I couldn't say definitely. There were probably some other projects that were moderately successful before that, but it was certainly the first one to just go absolutely to the moon. I mean, I don't know what the market cap was, but I'm sure they cracked a few billion.
Oh yeah, I think it was at least like six or seven at one point.
There was a story about a guy who or whoever who had not yet claimed his pre-sale. The last I heard about that was probably a month ago, but there was someone who their initial of 2 BNB, I think, was worth like $23 million or $30 million, something absolutely insane like that. So, I mean, it's easy to imagine, you know, you put that into everyone's collective mind and they, you know, everyone thinks, okay, this is possible. And then you have a million scams and a million copycats, and some of them do all right. I think I missed that by about a week. And then I bought Safe Galaxy like a week or two later, and then paper handed it same day. Mm-hmm. And it was painful to look at what could have been there.
Yeah. Like when my main introduction to all this, like when I went and bought some ass was, I don't know if you've noticed, but their Telegram is like 100% like 24/7 chat going. And I got in on there and just started kind of learning like this whole new world of crypto. Cause like I said, you know, I've spent most of my time with Ethereum based products, and, you know, I like VeChain and stuff like that. We've like interviewed Michael from Star Atlas, and that's built on Solana. But realistically, like with Binance, I had no information about it. So I kind of had to learn as I was going. And also in that chat, it was really interesting because somebody was saying, you know, how much can this get up to, like, you know, in dollars? And one of the people is like, we don't talk in dollars. We talk in market cap. Yeah. And I was like, that's a really interesting thought process I had never had before, where it was like, okay. And that made me think like, okay, the possibilities of something, like you have to look at it from there. Cause like you look at like something like SafeMoon, when I found out about it, I believe it had like 50 up to that point. But it's like, people are like, oh, can this get up to a dollar? It's like, well, realistically, it'd probably be worth more than Bitcoin, you know? And people were saying the same thing about some other stuff. I'm like, you really can't do that. Like, if it goes up to a dollar or even like 10 cents, you're talking more value than the collective unite or the collective world has in money, you know? It's like, yeah, that's going to go up to, you know, $4 quadrillion. That makes sense.
And I mean, I personally totally prefer to be able to conceptualize the tokens that I have. I know, I guess people like the ability, the, you know, owning a trillion tokens or owning hundreds of billions of tokens.
Yeah.
But yeah, my preference would be for a coin to actually be realistically able to go to a dollar, or see that it's, you know, a couple cents or a fraction of a cent, not a thousandth of a thousandth of a cent.
Yeah. And actually, that's one thing I noticed about SafeSex is you guys have, what is it, a 10 billion coin cap?
Four billion. With about 600 plus burned.
I wanted to kind of start with maybe like how the user experience is, because we're kind of more familiar with like Ethereum. Of course, you know, we've done interviews with people on different chains, but Binance is probably one that we don't use quite as much. Would you say using it is kind of using SafeSex Finance, would it be similar to kind of like a farm like Badger or Harvest Finance, or is like the use a little bit different?
In terms of actual use, so, I mean, we have a charity component, which, you know, raises money seamlessly from every transaction. And then, it, you know, it adds liquidity from every transaction. I think that's harder to achieve on Ethereum, although I know, for example, Dojira is able to do like an automatic redistribution based on every transaction. But, I mean, the big thing is like it's centralized, and because of its centralization, the Binance Smart Chain is able to like keep cost low. So, I mean, it's possible that when Ethereum fixes that issue, like Binance Smart Chain just gets destroyed. I don't know.
I get you. And it says that your main goal is mission is essentially raising awareness about safe sex practices within the frictionless DeFi community, which I love term frictionless as well. Now, most of us have been educated about the benefits of safe sex practices at some point in our lives. And there are a number of non-crypto projects with a similar mission. Is there a specific reason you think crypto people might gravitate to this project? And what additional value does owning this token provide?
Good question. I'm not sure if I would say people in crypto in particular. I think there's nothing better than sex, right? So it's just a good meme. Like you get to own sex. You can send someone sex, right? You have safe sex tokens. In terms of people being aware of safe sex practices, I mean, that's definitely true in, you know, most developed countries. But then when we're looking at charities, for example, you know, there are a lot of good charities that do work, you know, around women's reproductive health and sex education in impoverished nations, for example.
Excellent. And do you have any interest in using this token for like sex workers? I remember hearing about Spank Coin was like one that was looking to do something along those lines. But actually, that is really a real use case, though, finding ways to monetize that type of content. Is that anything you guys are interested in?
It is not. There are a lot of projects right now. I mean, there's got to be way more than 10. I could name like four right now that are doing something like that. Like they're either making their own app to kind of compete with OnlyFans, for example, or, you know, they're doing adult NFTs and partnerships and stuff like that. Personally, I'm not interested in that. I don't want to, you know, I'm not like a perfect person or anything. And I'm not, you know, trying to, you know, look down on anyone for their work or whatever. Like people have got to do what they got to do, but I wouldn't want to like promote consumption of pornography. That's like kind of against my values.
Okay, understood. Let's definitely go through the white paper a little bit then. Can you speak a little bit to the fees that are generated by the protocol and the monetization factor?
Yeah, for sure. So the fees are 8% currently. We do have the ability to lower that in the future should that you know, be determined to be beneficial for the longevity of the project. So 8% total fee, 2% is automatically, frictionlessly redistributed to all holders in a, you know, the math makes it so it's proportional to how much you currently hold. And then there is another 6%, which is the quote unquote liquidity fee. And half of that actually goes to liquidity. So it's, you know, it creates an LP pair. And it ultimately lands in the liquidity locker. And then the other 3% gets stored as BNB within the contract itself. And we're able to call it. That is essentially the charity pool. And we call that from the charity wallet, which collects the BNB. We haven't actually donated yet, sorry, but we do have probably about $14,000-$15,000 raised at this point.
That's excellent. Yeah, I'm looking at some of the causes here. I think one of them as well was to against sex trafficking. Is that correct?
That is, yeah. There are really two primarily that I'm looking at right now. So there's a platform called The Giving Block, thegivingblock.com. And they're a platform that facilitates cryptocurrency donations to quite a significant number of different charities. And one of them is Engender Health, which, as I mentioned, that's what I was talking about earlier. It's a charity that does basically women's health stuff in impoverished nations. And then the other one is a human trafficking organization, and an organization that combats human trafficking. Sorry.
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent. And when the fees are given or made by the protocol, what type of actions are the users taking? Is it just transaction? Okay, it looks like it's just from buying and selling. Is that correct?
Any transaction.
Okay. Can you give an example of some of the transactions you can do on the platform or some of the uses?
Well, really, it's buy and sell or send, right, at this point. So on the roadmap, we do want to ultimately, you know, have our, and this is kind of like next steps, Web3 integrated website where users can, you know, buy NFTs directly on our website using sex tokens or buy merch on our website directly using sex tokens. So those are two of the use cases we're thinking up. I got to talk to some more people on Fiverr. I've reached out to a few, but we don't actually have like a professional web dev on the team. So that's something we've got to look into.
Excellent. I had read about the NFT drop, and I think it noted that you guys were doing or had done an airdrop. Can you give some details on the airdrops?
Yeah. So, the airdrop was really, we've had quite a rocky road as a project, right? So we had an initial launch, which essentially the contract had an error in it. Now I'm not the contract deployer. I'm only the contract owner for the new contract, but I am most certainly not a Solidity dev. But anyway, the initial contract had an error in it, which essentially made the liquidity fee unusable. So it had to be disabled so that we could no longer be increasing liquidity or earning money for the charity using that contract. So we launched a new contract, and then we needed to airdrop all of the holders of V1, the V2 token. So that would be what that airdrop is referring to.
So it was like a makeup airdrop, so to speak?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, so Rob.
When I had heard about SafeSex, it looked like, I don't know too much about PancakeSwap, but it looked like they had done some kind of version 1, version 2 at that point that caused you guys to have to pause up again. Is that what you're referring to?
No, not really. That's kind of coincidental, but it worked out in a sense. So PancakeSwap was switching from version 1 to version 2. Our initial contract, which had a bug in it, which is kind of unrelated to that, was on version 1. So when we did the swap, the new contract was for version 2.
What does that mean exactly? Like when you say like Pancake had a version 1 versus a version 2, why don't they just update their original to have that? I'm not very familiar with Pancake.
I assume it has something to do with maybe Solidity version or something like that. So a contract will either be compatible with 1 or 2. I think it's a similar thing on Uniswap, if I'm not mistaken, when they do their transition from major versions.
Mm-hmm. And what's the background of the team behind SafeSex Finance?
So at this current point, there's 5 of us. There's me from Canada. I mean, I can talk about myself if that's of interest. And then we have Andrew and DJ, who are in the United States. DJ is from England, but living in the United States. And then John Snowing and our artist Levi are both from Malaysia.
So I had a question. I know that you have doxed yourself. Do you have any of the other team members who have?
Publicly, no. We've all shared photos of ourselves internally. The kind of, the messaging, I guess, from John and Andrew and Levi and DJ is that they would be more comfortable doing it at a later stage in the project, essentially.
And what do you think made them choose that? And what made you choose to dox yourself?
Right. So when we were doing the swap from V1 to V2, the liquidity was locked with DXSale for 4 or 5 years. So in order to access that liquidity, we needed people to send us their V1 tokens. So we got them all into a team wallet, and then someone needed to sell them for BNB and add that liquidity to the new contract on PancakeSwap. So I was adamant that whoever did that had to be doxxed, and no one was really stepping up. So I was like, okay, I will fully dox internally to the team so that I can handle this in a way that's not super sketchy, right? Because it was like $200,000.
Yeah, I've noticed working with shared stake that you run into situations sometimes where it's not so convenient for everybody to be anonymous. You kind of need somebody to sometimes be that person.
Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of needed to happen at least internally. And then I actually made a mistake with the contract as well. And I put in the wrong address for the liquidity. So I don't know if you read my Medium article there, but I accidentally put in the address that I used to add liquidity instead of the locked liquidity address So that's obviously a very sketchy mistake. So part of the reason I like publicly doxed was to give people some like reassurance that I wasn't going to use that money. Obviously that money does not belong to me at all. So I had commissioned a guy on Fiverr to write a Python Web3 script that checks that wallet periodically, once an hour currently. And as soon as it accrues 0.1 LP tokens or more, it automatically sends it to the locked liquidity address. And I just have that running in the secure VPS.
I have a question for you about governance. So I know Binance is, of course, a little bit more of a centralized type of currency. But in terms of SafeSex Finance, are you guys looking to be decentralized? Is the SafeSex token going to be a governance token where people can do snapshot voting? Like, what role does the community have and how much of the project is decentralized?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess it really, the project is not decentralized in that sense. It's decentralized and community oriented only in the sense that as a team, we try to operate in a very transparent manner, and major decisions are communicated to the community, and we take community feedback seriously. But in terms of a comparison to a real project is not the right word, but compared to a project that has some kind of a greater technical aspirations, that they're really solving some interesting use case, for example, we're almost like a pure meme coin, right?
I get you, but also it seems like you have some more benefits that you offer, especially in terms of philanthropic efforts, charity, take Dogecoin, for instance. I'm pretty sure, even though I feel like the whole wave of interest is pretty much because of Elon Musk right now. Still though, the token does have some valuable use to it. It does have some benefits, I guess you could say, over Bitcoin in terms of energy consumption, but it started out as a meme essentially, and now people are looking at it as a real coin. And in this light, you have something that could very much be a meme, Safe Sex is important, and also some of the charities, especially involved in stopping trafficking. I think that's pretty important.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I think the Dogecoin stuff is absolutely wild.
It's crazy. What's happening with it? Have you guys been audited? What stuff have you guys done to kind of show the security of your protocol?
Yeah, good question. We have been audited. It was an admittedly quite a light audit. It was done with Safe Fair Moon project, and they do some auditing. Really, it just is a comparison. It's like a side-by-side comparison with Safe Moon. Now, in the future, at some point, we could certainly, do a real audit. That's, often they cost $5,000, $10,000, $15,000. But I think from my perspective, in terms of the security, it's based on SafeMoon. There's a million clones of SafeMoon. It's a very well studied and understood piece of Solidity, I would imagine. So the audit, having just done an essentially side-by-side or diff and showing the differences from SafeMoon, I think is kind of appropriate for this stage of the project.
And what would you say drives partnerships with SafeSex Finance? Is it trying to find other integrations with other protocols? Is it more along the lines of the Safe Sex mission itself? What drives kind of expansion and growth of the project?
Good question. We are, we've been around since March, but we've really only been, able to focus on the project for, you know, like a week, since, you know, we did, our minds were on the swap, and then we did the swap and the airdropping, and there was a lot of follow-up from that, dealing with, you know, community members who maybe didn't receive their tokens or didn't know how to put the new contract into MetaMask, et cetera, or sent us the wrong safe sex. So we haven't had too much time to really dig into this, but we do have a partnership with goldfarm.io, which is pretty exciting. They're gonna drop our farm on Sunday. So that's our main partnership right now. But it certainly has been floated that we should be looking into celebrity partnerships, especially in relation to the charity angle. So for example, celebrities who do charitable work with AIDS organizations and things like that. So that is certainly top of mind.
Are there any specific celebrities or groups you've reached out to yet that you're willing to share?
we haven't started reaching out. I've got... Charlie Sheen is, of course, one of the names that's been floated.
Magic Johnson, maybe?
Yeah, Magic Johnson is the other name that's been coming up. I think that's, I don't know, maybe I'm just not dreaming big enough. I feel like, although those are both massive names, like Charlie Sheen would be the ultimate marriage of the charitable aspect and the meme aspect. You know, it would be quite complimentary.
I agree completely. I'd love to see Charlie Sheen sponsored.
So I was wondering, do you have like very much personal experience with Binance? Like, I assume you probably started more with Bitcoin and probably Ethereum. So what led you over to Binance, and how long have you kind of been playing around in that space?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I've actually never owned a Bitcoin. All of my, my trading history was like Ethereum ERC20 based up until Binance, because I'm just trying to hit 10x's and 100x's, which has not really happened yet. But that's my trading philosophy at this stage in my life. So, but
it is like I said before, it's a very different world where, like, you know, you're not looking to like 2x or 4x. It's like 10x's, 100x's, even 1000x's sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm only looking, even on Ethereum, for like pretty tiny market caps. I mean, that's what really led me to DXSale in the first place. And then again, like once I started following that community, it, with the launch of BSC, you know, with the fees being so low, the barrier to entry is also quite low. And then the fees on DXSale to launch your own token and have it automatically list on PancakeSwap and automatically lock your liquidity is very low. So that's really how I got exposure to BSC. There were just, I mean, seems like, you know, 50 plus projects a day launching on there.
So what, I have not heard about DXSale before. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a decentralized platform for launching cryptocurrency projects, right? So it's multi-chain. It has you know, support for Ethereum, Binance. Believe they're going to be integrating with Cardano. They're integrated with Matic as well. So if you have your own code, essentially you can submit it. I haven't actually launched a pre-sale through them, but they facilitate launching and pre-sales, right? So you host your pre-sale through them, you set your criteria, you know, I'm trying to raise X BNB. There's, you know, the maximum buy-in is, you know, half a BNB or two BNB, et cetera. And then you can set as well, what percentage of the funds raised will go to liquidity and how long the liquidity will be locked for. And then once the pre-sale is over, you essentially click finalize and it automatically adds your liquidity to PancakeSwap and locks it for the predetermined time. You know, and then trading starts and then people can withdraw their tokens directly from the platform.
So does it create an address for you as well when you're doing that process?
I believe there is a component which I'm not too familiar with, which actually generates contracts for you, but the vast majority would already have their contract in place, I believe.
So I guess, like, what is it like to start a project? Is it a pretty difficult process? Like, is it stressful?
I'm not sure what the typical experience is. It has been a total roller coaster. It has been an absolute roller coaster. I think we've had, a fair bit of issues that have kind of hindered us, and it's definitely been very stressful. As stressful as it's been, it's still very rewarding. It's very cool to have, a Telegram full of people, and a lot of them are like really into the project and like what you're doing and believe in it. It's cool. I've been saying it's kind of like what I imagine it's like to be a magician, not a magician, a musician on stage, with no crowd. It would be not a very fulfilling experience, but as long as there's some people out there who like what you're doing, it's pretty cool.
It's pretty interesting. I definitely like your meme as well associated with it. It seems like you guys can be pretty creative with your content.
Yeah, our artist is pretty talented, that's for sure. I think it works with the name and the ticker extremely well. She's actually out on sick leave, so thoughts and prayers for Levi, our artist.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Are there any other DeFi projects that you're interested in or involved with that you want to talk about?
I'm not in any DeFi projects in terms of, active participation. My other investments, if I were to show my investments, are VXSale and then ADD, formerly PLT, which is essentially a DeFi aggregator, and they're trying to build an app, and they're trying to, make their move into Africa and bring DeFi, mobile accessible DeFi to Africa is one of the things they're working on.
Excellent.
What would you say like some of your biggest hurdles have been along the way? I know we've talked about it a little bit, but like, I guess flesh them out a little more and just like, it's like, I've been interested in what it's like to create a project. Mm-hmm. It's I've been so busy that like trying to do that kind of thing, it just seems like it'd be crazy. And I don't even know like how I would have the time to do what you've been doing.
It has been tough to find the time. This past week, I've kind of like taken the foot off the gas a bit, been able to, focus my mind back on work, go for walks, work out, cook and all that. But it was very hectic, 2 weeks before that. So yeah, I mean, the first hurdle was our initial launch was like a catastrophe, to be honest, right? So we had, we didn't know, of course, about the bug at the time. So as soon as we launched, Safe Fair Moon put out on Twitter the bug that, I think they probably knew about ahead of time. So immediately we have this like totally legitimate FUD coming at us, which is, pretty serious. Just to kind of dig into that a little bit more, what the bug does is the liquidity functionality of the contract, the part that adds the liquidity, it has to sell the native token, in this case SEX, right, for BNB on the market in order to generate BNB so that it can create the LP pair. Essentially, there is a function, not clear on my coding terminology here, but a function in the contract which says, when it reaches this threshold, sell. And it was the bug was that it had to reach some like astronomical amount. So essentially it would build up a super huge amount and then dump it on the market, essentially, you know, just like totally crashing the price at some point. So there was that FUD. We had to disable that functionality. The other thing was that despite all of our best efforts, our pre-sale was botted. So immediately on listing, there was a bot that purchased, at a minimum, there was one bot that purchased 60 slots. So 60 times 0.5 BNB. At the time, I think that was about $30,000. And then within, I don't know, minutes or however long, like really immediately after listing, they dumped it for, I think, like 300K. So, you know, the price skyrockets out of the gate and then it crashes. And then, you know, I mean, it just kind of devastating for the price. It's very demoralizing for the team, of course, and more so probably for the community as well. Yeah, big pain in the ass. I mean, we took a lot of precautions in that sense. We didn't list until the very last second. There was FUD even based on that because, you know, it appears, I think it's probably true that someone maybe had the contract address and was set up, because apparently the bots take, you know, it takes a little bit of time to set up. So yeah, that created FUD against the previous contract owner and deployer, Dr. Deployer, who we eventually parted ways with. Oh yeah, and then due to my lack of experience, when we did the swap, just post-swap, when I had to do the airdrop, I forgot, I turned the, I think, tax to zero, but I forgot to turn the liquidity to zero. So then I started sending, you know, massive amounts to people, like 50 to 100 holders at a time. And because of the liquidity functionality, based on those transactions, it ends up selling SEX, right, on the market. So there was that. There's also speculation that there was botting on the second listing as well, which really just means like buying on the market, you know, in an automated fashion before real people can do it, just, you know, based on the fact that there is going to be hype, right? Mm-hmm. So they buy it and then people buy into the green candle and then they get wrecked when the bot unloads on them.
So yeah, can you explain that to me a little bit? Like, how is the price determined? That's kind of something I've always wondered, because, you know, there's a lot of exchanges where you can actually just like put in how much you want to pay for something versus something like this.
Yeah.
It seems like you just have to accept the price that exists at that point. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think with PancakeSwap, that's pretty much correct. This is something I'm not certainly no expert in. There are some videos on YouTube that are decent in explaining it, but it's kind of a thing that a little bit for me goes in one ear and out the other. But essentially, when you add your initial liquidity to PancakeSwap, you set the price initially by setting the ratio of the pairing. So setting the ratio of BNB to SEX in this case. And then the price is, yeah, just a direct, has a direct relationship to that.
And can you trade stuff besides BNB for it?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the full list, but you, but essentially you can do USDT on BSC. So you could trade SEX directly for USDT on PancakeSwap, and you could trade BNB directly for USDT as well.
Gotcha. How do you deal with naysayers and people experiencing FUD?
Well, you know what? You depending on the situation in the chat at the time, I think, you know, ideally you know, this is kind of a thing that you know, you should be applied to all aspects of life. You at first give people the benefit of the doubt and, you know, approach it from a good, positive place. You know, if you try and win people over, right? But at some point, if people are just consistently being too negative and you've explained your position and they still want to FUD, then, you know, we have a responsibility to the project to keep the chat at a certain wavelength, right? Like if the chat is full of FUD all the time, anyone who comes in is going to immediately leave or immediately have serious doubts.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to ban FUDders at some point.
Yeah, there's definitely a balancing act with it, because on one hand, you don't want to look like you're just, you know, kicking anybody out who speaks against the project or says anything negative, right? Because then it's almost like,
yeah,
you know, an autocracy, you know, oligarchy or something. But on the other side, when you give people too much leeway and they're just FUDing your project all the time, well, that's not good either. And it distracts from the people who are trying to actually make the project better.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta strike a balance. And I mean, you know, you have to kind of determine, is this coming from a good place, or are they just being a dickhead?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's tough because, you know, there are those knowledge gaps, you know, I mean, and it's something we deal with too as marketers working with Shared Stake. You know, we deal with mm-hmm. people who are brilliant developers who can do all kinds of fascinating things with code, that sometimes they'll say something and not realize like, well, hey, what does that mean? You know, and because, you know, you're speaking to a different department, their verbiage might be different, the way they understand it, contextually, the problems. It's challenging to work in DeFi with people who have different skill sets, and there's only so much they can know about, you know, each department or whatever it is they're handling. Mm-hmm. But it's also amazing how, in spite of that, though, there's a lot of honesty, there's a lot of trust in the space, and there's a lot of positivity too. So it kind of goes to show that just because you don't know something doesn't mean you got to be negative about it, right? There's ways to bring attention to problems, and there's ways to learn. So you just kind of have to find that balance when you're managing those chat rooms, Discords, or whatever.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. I mean, on the note of you know, positivity and trust and stuff, one of the coolest parts of being involved in the project is being able to, or, you know, getting the experience of talking to people, you know, on voice chat like we are right now. You know, like people who are investors in the project, I've talked to people from like all over.
What you were just talking about actually brought up something. So I think when I got in, there was some girl that was in the Telegram, like doing something. And I feel like she was removed from her position or something like that. Does that sound familiar to you?
Ah, yes. Yes, it does.
What was that all about?
So I forget what day that was. I think that might have been the night of the V2 launch.
I feel like it was, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, essentially what happened, she's also a mod in the DXSale pre-sale apes Telegram, which is quite a large kind of significant group in the BSC shitcoin space, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's nothing personal against her. Really, like, it was a very stressful night for me. And I just had people, many, many people, other mods, kind of blowing up my chat a little bit, saying like she should not be a mod, and yeah, it's kind of bullshit. And I didn't really have time to, you know, essentially it's like I'm not willing to keep hearing about this. I gotta do it. So yeah, she was not happy with that at all. I said sorry. She came into voice chat and I like explained, you know, I didn't have time to deal with it, essentially.
What was she doing exactly, or not doing?
I think she was just, you know, going back and forth with people a little bit aggressively. That's kind of my understanding in a way that may not be befitting of a professional environment.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good, especially like at a time like that. Because so they were doing the audit, and the time frame kept getting pushed back. And I think a lot of people were getting like really, really sketchy about that too. So was that what she was doing, is just kind of getting angry at people?
I think she was. I don't know if that's related. That could be though. That's that was a pain too. The first time it definitely seemed, because they, you know, they called us out for the bug with the first contract. And then when we paid for an audit, not my decision, by the way, to do an audit with them, they really took forever. And again, it's like, it's not complicated. It is doing a diff of SafeMoon and our contract. They're extremely similar, and just pointing out the differences. I think it would take someone like honestly 45 minutes to do.
Really?
But yeah, that kind of reminds me of another point, which is that, you know, I've been working in a professional kind of context for many years now, you know, lots of time on the phone, lots of time on chat, lots of emails sent, you know, in a very professional context. And it's funny to think of like the contrast of that. And I think a lot of people's experience on the internet, you know, I've been on the internet since I was, you know, I was on 4chan at like 13 years old, probably. You know, and the stuff you say on the internet is often very unprofessional. So it's,
yeah,
it's an interesting contrast. Obviously, I'm older now, and I'm keeping it very professional. But it is funny to see people, you know, I don't know, go ham in the chat.
That's how I used to be on Facebook too. And when I had to create a new Facebook, I was like, okay, I need to keep this as professional as possible. You know, I pretty much use it for businessy type stuff. Once in a while, I'll, you know, make a comment, but sometimes I'm just like, nah. Cause I can't even keep track of like what the hell Facebook or Instagram or Twitter are going to like or dislike that day.
Yeah, they're pretty fickle with their standards, and it's kind of surprising what they'll ban you for these days.
I deleted my entire YouTube comment history before I applied to my job.
So one of the other things too is like, I believe that the big crash that happened, I think that might have been like the next day, or at least like,
oh yeah,
I think that was like literally like the next day after the relaunch. Is that right?
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, we've talked about so much, so many things that have kind of screwed with us, and haven't even gotten to that yet. That's a huge thing too, right? Yeah, huge crash. BSC down like 60%. I don't know, overnight or over a few days.
I think it was hitting like, did it ever hit into the 200s? I believe it did.
Yeah, I think it did. I think it went down like under 250. I don't know if it, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of projects that lost like 75 to 90%.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, just still, some of them, like if they don't have a huge amount of clout, like Ethereum or Bitcoin or something like that, they're still like pretty low in comparison.
Totally.
Do you think that that's going to like take some time to recover? And like, do you think that like the shitcoin meme coin thing is going to be stalled for a while because of that? Or do you think it's going to recover as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I'm not much of an economist. I think it could be true. There's a lot of things that can hamper, you know, the ability of meme coins to rise again. So you have the market crash. And then you have so many scams and so many dishonest projects, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a combination of the two. I think, you know, if the crash hadn't have happened, we would be having a significantly easier time. Right now, the way we're viewing it is that we really need to be very smart with our marketing spend. And really wait until a much more serious upward trend starts becoming apparent before we kind of go all out. And yeah. In the meantime, it's about, you know, managing that spend, doing the little things, and working on the roadmap. Like I said, like Web3 integration for the website and things like that.
What are some of the things that you do have planned for the roadmap? And like, do you feel like you're on track with all the things you've planned?
Good question. I mean, I think we're about 12 days old. So we aren't exactly, ahead of schedule, but I don't think we're behind.
When you're saying 12 days old, are you talking about like the V2 relaunch?
Yeah, exactly.
It feels like it's been so much longer, like since
I know. A day in DeFi is a million years.
Yeah, it probably is though. It really probably isn't that long ago.
Yeah.
What do you think you can do right now to start like pumping that market cap back up to where it was?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, where it was, I mean, if we're meaning kind of like 1.2 million is where we were floating and chopping at prior to the swap. I would be so happy when we get there again. I'm going to be very happy. Like I said, we've got the partnership with goldfarm.io, very cool project. So I think that's going to bring us some good visibility. They have a 10,000 plus person chat, and they're currently doing their own marketing campaign. And as part of that, we will launch and we'll get some good visibility there. And then of course, people will be able to farm sex with gold, or they will be able to farm gold to earn sex. But in any case, that should bring us some good visibility. That's a good partnership. The other thing we're doing is got a video series from a German YouTuber who is actually makes good videos. Like a side note there, when you make one of these projects, you will have so many people DMing you that they are a TikToker or they're a YouTuber or they do this and that. And a lot of it is not good.
Yeah, I know. That's one of the reasons like that we actually like started having a real dialogue, is because we just like started chatting about like life, like normal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was good too, because like, you know, that's one of the ways that like you gotta, you know, people in this space, when they're in a position of power, you're going to have a lot of people reaching out to you and trying to like get involved. So you got to make that human connection first to like establish that you're not just a scammer, or that you actually do have your shit together in whatever way you're attempting to present yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what I was mostly referring to is you'll have like people with either TikTok, YouTube, etc., where they kind of have clearly like botted subscribers and like not authentic engagement. So, you know, if you are not kind of hip to it, you might be paying them for like basically nothing, because they'll make some cookie cutter video and no one's gonna see it. No real person.
Yeah, that was actually one of the things that I first noticed about SafeMoon that like made me think it was a scam is, I mean, you know, I was looking at stuff like Urine Finance and Badger and things like that, like legitimate big time projects. And I was seeing SafeMoon jumping up by like 50, 60,000 likes and followers every day. You know, I'm just like, I don't even still to this day know if that's real, because it's an absurd amount. You know, they probably have the biggest crypto following of anyone on Twitter. You know, they have like mass amounts of people following their Instagram, like stupid amounts, and it was going up by like, you know, 80 to 100,000 people every day for a while. And I'm just like, this is the kind of thing that looks like somebody is just buying followers.
It's really crazy. One of the conspiracy theories, I guess, I've heard about SafeMoon is that I don't know this, I haven't really looked into it too much, but this was thrown out as a possibility that they had initially intended to basically rug, but it became too big to possibly be able to get away with it.
Yeah, I think the way that I might have heard about them like about the rug thing was there was a Twitter that I follow called the War on Rugs. And I don't know if you ever saw any of their posts, but they were like basically going.
Yeah, they rugged.
Yeah, they were like, you know, just checking out all the content and stuff like that and kept making posts about the fact that Safe Moon was going to rug and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was an interesting one. You said that they rugged though?
Yeah, like the main guy from War on Rugs rugged.
Really?
Yeah, he leveraged his, you know, position within the community to scam.
Oh, no shit. When did that happen?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, like 2 weeks ago, maybe. Maybe,
oh, wow.
Maybe less. Yeah.
Holy shit. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Look into it. It's it was pretty big.
Wow. Did he do, like, what project did he do that with?
I don't remember. I could probably find it pretty quick, but off the top of my head, I'm not sure. There's so much drama. There can be so much drama in DeFi. I remember I was actually reading about it in, I think in Safe Fair Moon, actually, to give them credit. Yeah. You know what? I'll just as a point of interest, I'll send that to you guys after. I'm pretty sure Safe Mirror Moon did a good write-up on the whole thing. And there's some accusations flying around.
That's so funny. So did they delete their Twitter too?
I'm not sure. From what I saw, it was quite brazen. So I'm not even sure if they deleted things. It wasn't like, you know, you see some of these rugs and it just kind of like poof. Everything's deleted. Mm-hmm. This was kind of like, you just got rugged. Fuck you. I think.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Like yeah. I'm looking this up right now and I don't see them on Twitter anymore. And I was following.
Oh, okay. So no doubt.
I see like a couple other things, you know, but they're pretty obviously like clones or something like that, or probably right. Other ones who were trying to like spread the word about it. But yeah, that's crazy now that you mentioned that. Can you tell me like a little more about Gold Farm? Like what do people do? Are they actually buying gold? And then like, do they buy gold from Gold Farm or how does that work exactly? Like I have not really any idea how this will help you. Like, do you mine sex through them or what's going on exactly?
Yeah. So, I mean, the main thing is that it's going to give us exposure to their community. So they have, again, like a 10,000 plus Telegram following. And that actually, since the time I initially chatted with the guy from Gold Farm about a potential partnership, really not that long ago, they grew from 5,000 to 10,000. So they are like very aggressively pursuing partnerships with other currencies. Mm-hmm. So they're creating quite an ecosystem. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with FEG.
No,
I think that's a Uniswap or not Uniswap, sorry, an Ethereum based project, but quite a significant project. They did crack a billion market cap at some point. So a project that has a lot of legitimacy and that was one of the early Gold Farm partnerships. So that really speaks to, you know, how much of a serious project it is in any case. Really what it is we're going to have a farm with them that starts on Sunday and lasts 60 days or 2 months. And it's going to have 25 million SEX tokens in it. And so users who have the native gold token will be able to farm SEX with the gold. So really, I mean, it's kind of like a 25,000 or 25 million investment from us in SEX tokens. For exposure to their community.
And you said they're farming the token. So this doesn't have anything to do with actual physical gold then?
No, sorry. Yeah. So it's Gold Farm and their like symbol, their ticker is gold.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's my main like last question, I guess. Do you have anything else, Fry?
I think I've pretty much covered all the bases.
Cool. Well, Tony, do you have anything else to add?
No, I mean, yeah, if you're listening, thanks for listening. Guys, thanks for having me on. Come check out the project. I know, you know, we've had quite a rocky path, but we're going to stick around and battle it out and try and make it big. So Come check us out. Go check out the website. I know you guys had the website up earlier. So, you know, we've got some pretty endearing art. I think, it just works. Think about it, you know. Do you want to buy some sex? I think you do.
Did you want to plug any of your socials?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So on Telegram, at Safe Sex Official, website, safesexfinance.com. And then you can find everything, you know, on the website.
Well, I think that's about it for me. So thanks, you have a good one. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for this is my first podcast. So it's been cool. Appreciate awesome. It a lot.
Yeah, it's great having you. I'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
All right. Likewise. All right. Have a good one, guys. Bye.
Bye.